Africa, rise and shine. Africa, zorka. Africa, amka na unai.
Good morning and a very warm welcome to the final hour of Africa Rise and Shine. This is Channel Africa from an African perspective coming to you live from Johannesburg in South Africa. We are on DSTV's audio bouquet, Channel 802, and on www.channelafrica.co.za. I'm Lulu Gabu, in studio with Anne Musa, Tabiso Lohoko, and Figile Lingwati. In our top stories on Africa Rise and Shine at the Sawa, the U.S. Secretary of State makes an unprecedented visit to an Israeli settlement in the illegally occupied West Bank, the first chief diplomat from the U.S. to do so. South African female entrepreneurs gathered to network and urge the private sector as well as government to do more to support the economic development of women for Women's Entrepreneurship Day. And in economics news, Namibia's prime minister says the country is accelerating financial sector reforms to ensure that it has an optimal framework. In sports news, South African golfer leads the ongoing European Tours Joburg Open. But first up, the news with Anne Musa.
SABC News, independent and impartial.
From an African perspective.
Aman Musa, good morning. Officials in Uganda say at least 16 people have been killed in army and police operations to quell protests that broke out over the arrest of presidential candidate and pop star Bobby Wine. Protesters have been burning tires and blockading roads in the capital, Kampala, and other towns since Wednesday to demand Wine's release. On Thursday, security forces fired tear gas, live bullets and water cannons to disperse and detain protesters. 65 protesters were wounded and a further 350 were arrested in the clashes. Bobby Wine, who has emerged as the strongest challenger to veteran leader Yoweri Museveni, who has ruled the East African country since 1986. Ugandans called to the polls on the 14th of January. Head of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, has denied allegations by his home country, Ethiopia, of taking sides in the conflict in Tigray. This after the military accused him of supporting as well as trying to procure arms and diplomatic support for Tigray's People's Liberation Front, which is fighting federal troops. In a message on Twitter, Ghebreyesus called on all parties there to work for peace and the safety of civilians. Hundreds have reportedly died and tens of thousands have fled the area after 2 weeks of clashes. However, due to a blackout of most communications, it is difficult to verify the actual figures of those killed or displaced in the violence. U.S. President-elect Joe Biden says Donald Trump will be remembered as one of the most irresponsible presidents in the nation's history. He has also warned that the U.S. is facing a dark winter due to the coronavirus pandemic and called for unity in what he described as a national emergency. The U.S. has so far recorded more than 11.6 million coronavirus infections and more than 250,000 deaths. Biden has also denounced Trump's refusal to accept defeat in the elections while speaking after a video conference with state governors.
The country is still in a crisis, and there's a dark winter still ahead. Yesterday, America reached another tragic milestone, and there are empty chairs and dining room tables were filled just days and weeks ago with loved ones, family, friends who laughed and talked together.
Chile's chief of police, Mario Rosas, has resigned following months of allegations of human rights violations and use of excessive force. Rosas quit hours after two boys were shot and wounded during a raid. The BBC's Katie Watson has the details.
The two boys, aged 14 and 17, were wounded during a raid at the offices of Chile's Child Welfare Service in the city of Talcahuano. But Mario Rosas' leadership had been under heavy scrutiny well before this incident. Ever since mass demonstrations over inequality kicked off last year, there have been accusations of abuse by the country's security forces. Thousands of people have been injured during clashes with authorities, and many cases are still under investigation.
And finally, the Tabumbeki Foundation has unveiled the design of the Tabumbeki Presidential Library, designed by renowned Ghanaian-British architect David Adjei. The unveiling took place during an event in Houghton, Johannesburg last night. The facility will house, among others, an exhibition space, research center, a women's empowerment center, auditorium, digital experience space, and a hub that will hold artifacts and key documents of Mbeki, as well as other significant African historical figures. That's the news headlines at 7:30 Central African Time.
SABC News, independent and impartial.
From an African perspective.
It's 7:05 Central African Time, and you're listening to Africa Rise and Shine, coming to you live from Johannesburg in South Africa. The United States Secretary of State has made an unprecedented visit to an Israeli settlement in the illegally occupied West Bank and the disputed Golan Heights, the first chief diplomat from the U.S. to do so. Mike Pompeo visited the Sakhod Winery, part of a network of settlements in the West Bank, which are considered illegal under international law. The United States has sought in recent years to break with the international consensus, including Security Council resolutions that have explicitly determined the illegality of settlements and Israel's annexation of the Golan Heights as null and void and without international legal effect. Shoen Bryce Peace reports.
With Pompeo's visit, a reaffirmation of Washington's position that it no longer considers settlements illegal, despite a 2016 Security Council resolution reaffirming them as a flagrant violation under international law and without legal validity.
Today I'll get a chance to visit the Golan Heights. The simple recognition of this as part of Israel, too, was a decision President Trump made that is historically important and simply a recognition of the reality. During the Trump administration, America stands with Israel like never before. Indeed, the commitment we've made, the ironclad commitment we've made to the Jewish state, will continue.
But these moves by the United States have largely isolated them on the international stage, no less in the United Nations Security Council, even from their closest allies, Ambassador Jonathan Allen of the United Kingdom.
As we made clear repeatedly in this council, the United Kingdom opposed annexation and welcomed its suspension. Other unilateral action, which jeopardizes the physical viability of a future Palestinian state, is also unacceptable. And the United Kingdom condemns the government of Israel's publication of tenders for construction in the East Jerusalem settlement of Givat Hamatos, an extremely sensitive area of the West Bank. Settlements are illegal under international law and remain an obstacle to peace and a threat to the two-state solution.
This was echoed by European Union member states in the Council. Listen to German Ambassador Günther Sauter.
As we have emphasized jointly with our European partners in numerous discussions with the government of Israel, these steps also weaken efforts to rebuild trust and confidence between Israelis and Palestinians with a view to resuming dialogue. We call on Israel to reverse these negative decisions and to immediately cease all settlement activities in the occupied Palestinian territories, including in sensitive areas around East Jerusalem, such as Givat Hamatos, Hahoma, and E1.
South Africa's Ambassador Jerry Machila joined other council members in condemning the continued seizures and demolition of Palestinian property in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem.
As you have done previously, have caused the Security Council to hold Israel accountable for its illegal action in contraventions of this council resolutions and contravention of international law. If this was occurring with almost any other issue on the council agenda, we would not have hesitated to take action. Double standards perpetrated the council only undermines its credibility and ability to fully implement its mandate to maintain international peace and security.
Pompeo also earlier announcing that the State Department would declare the global BDS movement as anti-Semitic. The boycott, disinvestment, sanctions movement is a non-violent international Palestinian-led initiative that seeks to use economic punitive actions to pressure Israel to meet its obligations under international law and modeled after the international anti-apartheid movement against South Africa. Pompeo labeled the movement a cancer and directed the State Department to ban funding to any organization it determines to be participants or supporters of the BDS movement. I'm Sherman Bryce-Spees in New York.
Psychologists have advised that people going through retrenchments should allow themselves time to grieve the loss of their employment and income. However, they should not feel ashamed of losing their job since it's beyond the individual's control. Thousands of employees are continuing to face the risk of unemployment during the COVID-19 pandemic. Tabi Lembele reports.
Psychologists say losing a job can have the same effect as losing a loved one through death or even a divorce. Professor Renata Skuman from the South African Society of Psychiatrists says, however, the national lockdown should have given us a reality check that none of us are safe from retrenchment.
In any bad news situation, whether it's a retrenchment, we will go through the normal grief stages or bereavement stages, where the first one is denial, the second one can be anger, and then negotiation happens before we actually start to accept the situation and move on into practical aspects. And I think anger and the why me stage is very prominent, and it can also prevent you from actually taking positive action in terms of what to do next.
Rafiq Lockhart, a clinical psychologist, says if you are unprepared, you get paralyzed by the bad news.
But the problem is where people get stuck. So they get stuck in anger, or they get stuck in depression. Or they remain living in the fantasy that last minute somebody will rescue the situation. Because it has happened, but on average it doesn't. So when we live in the fantasy expectation of at the last minute I'll be rescued like in the movies, that's dangerous. When we get stuck in anger, we're angry all the time. Then the only people who really suffer is our family. And when we get stuck in depression, then that's also the bad thing.
Lockhart says some people have kept the retrenchment a secret from their families, waking up every morning and pretending to go to work. The family then expects the same standard of living, and the individual spirals out of control. He says they tend to seek professional help when it's too late.
So they come to me when things have gone really bad. They're either suicidal, or they've swallowed pills, or they're thinking about jumping off a bridge, or they've been drinking now for ages, or they're taking anti-anxiety pills and they've got addicted to it, or they're taking headache pills in a 10, 15, 20 a day. So unfortunately, not enough people are coming proactively. We can still fix it, but it would be nice if they came a bit early.
Legal expert Osborne Mlatudi, the managing director of Mlatudi Advisory Services, encourages people to take advantage of employee assistance programs.
The one aspect that affected employees tend to ignore, it's the offer by the employer relating to counseling. Those sessions will go a long way. They'll, as a starting point, help those employees who are affected if they are not able to cope with retrenchment. Insofar as seeking alternative employment, of course, it will depend on what the markets need, the skills that they have, the experience that they have. I have come across some of my clients who got retrenched today and tomorrow they found another job.
Counselors say while retrenchments can be difficult, they are certainly not a death sentence. In some cases, they may be the final push towards doing what you've always wanted to do, but were scared or never got around to doing it. It may even lead to a positive career change. Tabi Lembele, Johannesburg.
Across the globe, every second, there's always a breaking story.
Kulitanjoy for Channel Africa Radio in Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa.
Reporting for Channel Africa, I am Hilda Kekeloa in Zambia.
Our cutting-edge and hard-hitting journalism leaves no stone unturned, giving you the whole picture every time.
George Muhango, Channel Africa, Blantyre.
Reporting for Channel Africa, this is Moki Kinzeka in Yaoundé.
From an African perspective, listen to Channel Africa in English, Kiswahili, French, Silozi, Portuguese, and Chinyanja, informing the world about Africa.
Join us every day and know what is happening around you.
Channel Africa.
I
am an African. I owe my being to the hills and the valleys, the mountains and the glades, the rivers, the deserts, the trees, the flowers, the seas, and the ever-changing seasons that define the face of our native land.
Masterclass Africa, where great minds connect. An explorative one-on-one talk show that seeks to tackle issues of leadership and consciousness on the African continent and around the world. Masterclass comes to you every Fridays, 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock Central African Time. Channel Africa, bringing you the African perspective.
It's 7:16 Central African time and you're listening to Africa Rise and Shine, coming to you live from Johannesburg in South Africa. The South African Reserve Bank Governor Lesetša Kganyago says that monetary policy has eased financial conditions and improved the resilience of households and business amid the economic implications of COVID-19. The bank announced its decision to keep the repo rates unchanged at 3.5% as expected. Delivering the Monetary Policy Committee's decision, Kganyago says that monetary policy on its own cannot improve the potential growth rate of the economy or reduce fiscal risks. Tsepo Mungwai reports.
The Reserve Bank says it's done everything in its powers to bring relief to struggling households. Indebted consumers will continue paying the same on their debt installments, this time after the Reserve Bank left the repo rates unchanged at 3.5%. This means the prime lending rate, which is the rate at which banks lend money, will remain at 7%. The central bank has cut the rates by a cumulative 300 basis points earlier this year to cushion households and business against the impact of coronavirus pandemic. This time, two members preferred a 25 basis point cut and three wanted to hold rates at the current level. Reserve Bank Governor Lesetša Kganyago says the bank is not too concerned about inflationary pressures at this point.
Local food price inflation is expected to remain contained. The committee additionally notes the significant but likely temporary reduction in medical insurance price inflation for next year. Given low pass-through, risks to inflation from currency depreciation are expected to stay muted. However, additional exchange rate pressures could result from heightened fiscal risks. While there are no demand-side pressures evident, electricity and other administered prices remain a concern.
Reserve Bank expects the economy to contract by 8% this year, better than the 8.2% contraction forecasted in September. Consumer inflation is to average 3.2% this year, partly due to a slow economic recovery. Economist Isaac Odendal says there's a case for further monetary easing.
I think they could have done some more. I think they, you know, they obviously cut interest rates quite sharply, but as we've said now, there's possibly room for minor further reductions. They also intervened in the bond market. That helped, but I think they could have done more there. If you look at what some other emerging market central banks have done, they intervened quite a bit more in the bond market.
The next MPC meeting will be in January next year. I am Tshepo Mungwai in Johannesburg.
It's 7:19 Central African time and you're listening to Africa Rise and Shine. A Malawian court has ordered the release of fugitive pastors Shepherd Bushiri and his wife Mary. The magistrates ruled that the Bushiris were illegally arrested. The pair, who fled South Africa last week, handed themselves over to police in the capital Lilongwe on Wednesday. The leaders of the Enlightened Christian Gathering are accused of fraud and money laundering. For the latest on these developments, Samora Mangesi spoke to George Mango, Channel Africa's correspondent in Malawi.
The Bushiris have been given a bail.
which means they are out. And this bail has been given by the Lilongwe Magistrates Court through Acting Chief Resident Magistrate Viva Nyimba, who said unconditionally they don't have anything else, that they have to be kept in a police custody. Why? Because this warrant of arrest was not given to them through the Minister of Homeland and Security Affairs. So that's the major reason that the Chief Resident Magistrate, who is the acting, said as per the legal processes that did happen.
And why did the judge say the arrest was illegal?
The judge said the arrest was illegal because the South African government, or the HOPS, did not submit their warrant of arrest to the Ministry of Homeland and Security. That's the major reason that he said. And he said, once the South African government has given the Malawi government that such one, I mean the arrest of warrant through the Ministry of Homeland Affairs, then that would determine as to how far they can progress. But otherwise, at this time, it means 30 days of remand have been given to the Bushiris to be free. And within those 30 days, if there is not going to be any information from South Africa with regards to the arrest through Interpol, then definitely it's going to be something else. But they're waiting for 30 days to elapse as they are on a remand for South Africa to give out the details as to why there should be that arrest through the Interpol.
And what sort of reaction has there been from them specifically?
The reaction from the Bushiris has been that they are very silent. They don't want to speak much. But the issue is that their lawyer, Wapona Kita, has been given the same 30 days to prepare the arguments once the South African HOPS have presented their issue. And after those 30 days, when they are on a remand, that's when they can start, you know, making some arguments in the court of law. But as it stands now, the Bushiris are on a remand for 30 days waiting for South Africa to present their case as to why there should be that arrest.
And the police, how did they react to the release?
The police in Malawi, first of all, what they said was that they were acting on the arrest based on the Interpol warrant of arrest that was presented to them 2 days ago, because you might recall the fact that the Bushiris were being hunted by the police, and the next day they handed themselves to the police, and at that particular time, that's when the police arrested them, and then the bail application delayed because they were trying to check on whether the Interpol had some arguments to present to the court. So they are at the moment, they haven't said anything else, but they're just waiting from their counterparts in South Africa or the Interpol themselves to present the charges and then the arguments as to why they issued that warrant of arrest. So police here in Malawi haven't commented anything, but they're waiting for the Interpol to make everything legally binding so that legal arguments start after 30 days of remand.
So, George, where are they right now, currently?
Currently, the Bushiris are in the capital city, Lilongwe. They are at their home. That's where they are. But if it comes to them speaking to the media, they are just speaking through maybe their lawyer, who I mentioned, Wapona Kita, who was making some legal arguments in the court for them to be given that bail unconditionally.
That was George Mango, Channel Africa's correspondent in Malawi, speaking to Samora Mangesi. A global pandemic not only showcases the need for strong healthcare infrastructure, but very importantly, it shines a light on the research and development, as well as the allocation on research resources. A conventional research and development process takes 10 to 15 years to develop a new vaccine, especially for newly emerging pathogens. Yet the global race to develop a COVID-19 vaccine has been far from conventional. It has seen industry, government and academia collaborate in unprecedented ways, which begs the question why we haven't seen this level of collaboration and pool funding before the likes of Ebola, HIV, rare diseases and TB, for example, which kill someone approximately every 22 seconds. To help us unpack this, Samora Mangesi spoke to Kelly du Plessis, CEO of Rare Diseases South Africa.
We are relatively low down on the spectrum in terms of international spend. So we rank about 11th in terms of publications. So we've got, we've got really good quality research that comes up. But when you compare it back to the expenditure that we have available and the budget impact that is made available specifically for research and development in the healthcare sector, we are very, very low on the scale. We are under 0.3%. And essentially speaking, we'd like to be on 2% of the GDP. So there's lots of room for improvement in that regard.
A portion of South Africa's GDP is meant to be set aside for health research. With a recession and a contracted GDP, what does this mean for health research now and going forward?
So I think that that's the burning question that many of us are desperate to find out is, what the impact will be. We have seen, obviously, with the international surge in interest in particularly finding a COVID-19 vaccine, we have seen health R&D budget expenditure improve. However, what we're not seeing is consistency in with regards to previously researched conditions. And there's very little understanding as to how these budgets are allocated, particularly within the South African context. So whilst we know that a lot of work is done on HIV, TB, malaria, etc., there's numerous other conditions which have a high impact to our patient population that don't receive the necessary funding for the relevant research, which leaves those patients further marginalized by the conditions that they're impacted by.
Now, high-income countries have an average of 40 times more health researchers than low-income countries. Does South Africa have the skills needed?
Well, from a skills perspective, absolutely we do. What we have found from a patient perspective and from a patient advocacy group point of view is that there is a lack of collaboration very often. So we are starting to see changes in that. But previously, because the funding environment is so competitive, many different research sectors focus and they work in silos, specifically because of the fact that the funding environment is so competitive. So what we're hoping to see is a breakdown in those silos and a continuous flow of income across the board that's easily accessible to be able to improve the collaboration. So it's not necessarily a skill shortage, more so a collaboration and cohesive approach that's required.
And how can we ensure that Africa has access to a vaccine, funding and collaboration? And also, how do we prepare for continuous health threats?
So in terms of Africa as a continent, I think we've been relatively quiet in terms of access, and that's something that patients need to change. We need to develop a stronger voice. We need to ensure that we're not left behind as a continent and that we do whatever's necessary to ensure that we receive the same level of care that is accessible to many first world countries. In terms of determining the threats, obviously within the South African and in the African context, we deal with a lot of non-communicable diseases that aren't necessarily a problem overseas, such as HIV and TB and malaria. And as a result, it goes without saying that the healthcare expenditure, the budget would be spent differently because we are dealing with a lot of those high NCD burdens. However, there is a definitive need from a governmental perspective to recognize that there are still other disease entities that require research, development, and attention, and for us as patients to ensure that those are prioritized from a government point of view.
That was Kelly du Plessis, CEO of Rare Diseases South Africa, speaking to Samora Mangesi.
Hello. To celebrate African women's achievements, self-emancipation, human rights and democracy, listen to Womanity, Women in Unity, an advocacy radio program against all forms of gender-based discrimination and violence against women. Womanity, Women in Unity, on Channel Africa every Thursday at 10:05 Central African Time and every Sunday at 6:05 Central African Time. Womanity, Women in Unity, with Dr. Amaleya Gonez-Malka. Every Thursday at 10:05 Central African Time and every Sunday morning at 6:05 Central African Time. Channel Africa, celebrating African women's achievements, the voice of the African Renaissance from an African perspective.
It's 7:30 Central African Time and you're listening to Africa Rise and Shine. We're coming to you live from Johannesburg in South Africa on DSTV's audio bouquet channel 802 and on www.channelafrica.co.za. Our headlines up next with Anne Musa.
SABC News. Independent and impartial.
From an African perspective.
Good morning, I'm Anne Musa. The headlines: officials in Uganda say at least 16 people have been killed in army and police operations to quell protests that broke out over the arrest of presidential candidate and pop star Bobby Wine. Tanzania police say they have arrested an unspecified number of people suspected of planning to join Islamist militants in neighboring Mozambique. Those are the stories making headlines.
SABC News, independent and impartial.
From an African perspective.
Thank you, Anne. It is 7:31 Central African Time and you're listening to Africa Rise and Shine, coming to you live from Johannesburg in South Africa. Now, this November, local female entrepreneurs will gather to network, learn from each other and urge the private sector as well as government to do more to support the economic development of women for Women's Entrepreneurship Day, a global initiative celebrated at the United Nations and in 144 countries. In the wake of the pandemic and its unprecedented impact globally, WED is a call to action for all women leaders, innovators and entrepreneurs to consider developing their own businesses, drive economic expansion and advance communities worldwide. Now, to discuss this further, we have on the line Nokutula Magwaza, Women's Entrepreneurship Day South African Ambassador. Nokutula, good morning and thank you for joining us on Africa Rise and Shine.
Wow, thank you so much. That was a grand opening. Thank you for having me this morning.
Well, thank you for making time for us, Nokutula. Now, tell us more about Women's Entrepreneurship Day and what it's all about. And, you know, in our intro, we obviously speak about women going into entrepreneurship and setting up their own businesses. Just give us a sort of a background of what you're looking to achieve.
So the best way to start is perhaps going back to statistics that have been published, I think, in 2018. That currently in South Africa, we have 18.8% women-owned businesses, right? And in comparison, Ghana has 46.6% women-owned businesses. And this is just right here in Africa. It already shows us that we have a way to go and we have a stretch to go in getting women to be the players, the main and also core players in the economic drive to grow our economy in South Africa and, I guess, Africa as such. So that's the starting point. Now, women, our South African government has also indicated that they are looking to small business for economic growth. And within that small business that we are looking for growth, there's a great number, obviously, of women that are in business. They are in informal businesses, and some are informal and huge corporate businesses, but a greater part of the South African women in business are entrepreneurs that are selling from the streets, that are vendors, that are in the rural outskirts of South Africa, that we are looking as a Women Entrepreneurship Day organization and Bloom Inside Out to close that gap, to say we need small business to informal business to become formal small business and small business to grow to be big business. And so this initiative was initially launched in 2014 in the United States by Women Entrepreneurship Day Organization, who saw the plight of women living in poverty across the world, women that are feeding families, but they have nothing really to put on the table. In South Africa, we are looking at the unemployment, which also is another crisis over the current crisis that we are facing in 2020. And so it just calls for everyone in South Africa, not just males or men in business, but women in business to be significantly players of the economic growth for our country.
Now, Noctula, you know, you touch on the involvement of men as well with regards to ensuring that women entrepreneurs are pulled up or sort of raise each other up to that level. I mean, if you look at the numbers, you mentioned Ghana is sitting on 46% women entrepreneurs and South Africa at 18%. And in terms of development, both these countries are doing quite well. What are we doing wrong in South Africa that other countries are getting right?
That's an interesting one. I mean, I would go back to again to say, I mean, we have a history of women not obviously being educated. If you look centuries back, or even not too far back, there's probably still parents in the rural outskirts who are saying, "I will not invest in educating my daughter, who will soon get married," and to them, it's not. They don't think at a greater economic growth or greater community development by developing everyone. You know, it's like going to a soccer game with half the team of players, and we will not really fully exploit and fully leverage the capacity of this nation without developing women. You know, we want to ensure that the government recognizes what are we sitting with in South Africa, what are we faced with. So uneducated. Two, even if you are a graduate, the numbers of graduates, and now specifically women graduates that are sitting at home without jobs, is alarming. Now, those women will never have what I would personally have said we've enjoyed by working in corporate South Africa, where even if 3 years of experience or 5 years of experience, and in my case, 8 years of experience in Unilever, would almost set me up for a master's in business administration without being without going to a business school, because I have a good understanding of the basics of what makes the business tick and how to set it up properly and how to market it properly and how to engage the market properly. Now, a lot of them are women entrepreneurs in the informal sector, are uneducated. They don't even know how to even ride this new wave of technology we're talking about, this new normal of 4IR. Then we are talking about the world is a village, but they have no accessibility to technology. They have no access to digital connectivity. Now, the starting point will be, one, it will be great to have those digital hubs in the rural, in townships, that allow a greater amount, a number of women in business to connect, to be players in the e-commerce space, to be players in the global space by opening markets and not be only selling on the street corner in the northern KwaZulu-Natal or in Limpopo, but their craft and their work is able to be sold online across the country and the continent and the world. So the biggest and the starting point right now is leveraging what we are all are talking about, the power of technology in opening up markets, in leveling the play field. But we also then need to educate. We also have to give the basic skills of to be active online and connected in social media and have website presence and digital presence. So all of this is a biggest cry right now. That is going to be the biggest way to bridge the gap that we currently have.
How do women who want to be part of the movement go about doing so?
So in 20, let me say 5 years ago, I established a women advocacy initiative known as Bloom Inside Out. My mission there, even before we partnered Women Entrepreneurship Day organization globally, was to equip women, coach women. We offer coaching masterclasses to help them to say, yes, you've got a skill now, you've got a talent, and you are selling closely in your close neighborhood. However, people don't know what your brand is. They don't know what the narrative behind this brand. And we all know, we buy brands. We all know globally people buy brands. They don't just buy products. People buy solutions. And so when women don't have an understanding of, first, what is the brand? What is the solution I'm offering? What is my narrative behind it? How do I stand out from everybody else who may be doing braids, someone else who may be doing makeup, someone else who may be selling vegetables? How do I make sure mine are branded and they stand out and they're presentable and appealing? So Bloom Inside Out seeks to help women and small businesses to ensure that they have credible, authentic brand narratives around their businesses. And that way they gain the confidence to be able to speak up and speak to everyone and show up in big business to say, here I am a provider of this particular service. I solve such a problem, and this is why you should do business with me. So personal branding, business branding, and just executive branding to be able to get women to be as confident, bold, and have that conviction like we see men in business. So that's what Bloom Inside Out does, and we have a website called bloominsideout.co.za for everyone in South Africa and Africa to be part of that. We have social media where we constantly are inspiring, engaging, hosting lives that educate women and really sharpen each other's irons as we get to the market. And so in partnership with Where Do You Globally, it is to amplify that voice. It is to say, we are not just doing it alone as South Africans, because you don't go alone if you are to succeed. We are doing it across 144 countries because it is a global mission to close the gender equality gap, to get women to be economically viable, to prosper, and to really alleviate poverty and unemployment. That way our communities are better, that way our nations are better, and the world at large will be positively impacted.
Thus, empowering a woman is empowering the world.
There you go. Invest in the future means investing in women. We remain the future because we still are the biggest opportunity in the world.
Well, Noctula, thank you so much for joining us this morning on Africa Rise and Shine, and all the best. You're on all social media platforms. Anyone who needs to get in contact with you will be able to get access, or you just Google Noctula Magwaza. You'll have all the details up there in front of you. Thank you so much for joining
Fantastic.
Us.
Fantastic. And today, thank you so much that people can join us. They can just go to that website, bloominsideout.co.za. Register and be part of the whole day summit, lining up the executives from corporate SA and really making sure we learn the strategies that will keep our businesses successful and sustainable in the new normal. Thank
and
you.
This is not only for women, right? Men can also join be a part of it.
It is, absolutely. I mean, we have he for she initiatives that are there backing up women to make sure that we are co-leading and we are co-existing and we are succeeding together. We have allies that are men. Our speakers, we have males also in our speakers. 30% of our speakers are males because we want to learn from them. They've been captains of many of industries that we want to get into. And so every other male in business is openly invited today to also learn. I mean, there's no book that says it's only for women, or there's no book that said this is the way we're going to play in the new normal. So males also need to get into the wave, surfing the wave like pros of this new normal. We've all been thrown in it. We are in the deep end, and we are all learning to swim and really ride this wave to the crest.
Noctula, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and all the best.
Thank you so much.
That is Noctula Magwaza, Women's Entrepreneurship Day South African Ambassador, joining us on the line. It's 7:44 Central African Time, and you're listening to Africa Rise and Shine.
WHO recommends 30 minutes of physical activity a day for adults and 1 hour a day for children. If your local or national guidelines allow it, go outside for a walk, a run or a ride, and keep a safe distance from others. If you can't leave the house, find an exercise video online. Dance to music, do some yoga, or walk up and down the stairs.
Avoid touching your eyes, nose and mouth to slow the spread of the coronavirus. For more information on the coronavirus, visit the World Health Organization site at www.who.int.
It's 7:45 Central African time and you're listening to Africa Rise and Shine. Our economics update up next with Thabiso Lehoko.
Thanks, Lulu, and good morning. Unions representing workers at the South African Broadcasting Corporation say the strike action and expected blackout at the SABC will continue this Friday, as the latest move by the board is immaterial. The public broadcaster began its process of retrenchment, and letters have been issued to staff informing them that their positions are either redundant or they are considered surplus and have to reapply for their jobs. The retrenchment process affects 400 permanent workers. The board of the SABC has suspended the retrenchment process for a period of 7 days in order to allow all stakeholders to engage and explore further options. The CW's Aubrey Shabalala.
This simply means nothing. After 7 days, when the dust is settled, you can proceed. We have two demands and they're simple. Withdraw all dismissal letters with immediate effect, with no condition of 7 days or so forth. Abandon the Section 189 completely. So whatever happens in ungodly hour, we are not involved. We've seen they've spoken to the public. They've never spoken to us. We are the ones who are having the dispute. We are soldiering on. There is a complete blackout. We are calling on all workers to embark on action in defense of SABC, in defense of workers.
South African trade union BEMAU, which represents workers at the SABC, has accused the board and management of unfair labour practices by replacing permanent worker contracts with those of a freelance nature. BEMAU president Hannes Dubuisson says that their legal action in the labour court to interdict the retrenchment process will continue next week as scheduled.
Halfway through the BOTS consultation process, the SABC then told us that they are not going to terminate any independent contractors. They are dismissing permanent employees and they are replacing them with independent contractors who has no benefits, no leave, no sick leave, no pension fund, no medical aid. And that is an unfair labour practice. So what the SABC has now cleverly done or attempted to do is to simply not cut heads, but to simply move its personnel cost to a freelance cost.
South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa is among several leaders who have written a letter to G20 countries urging them to provide funds for COVID-19 vaccines, drugs and tests to combat the pandemic. Signed by Ramaphosa, Norway's Prime Minister Erna Solberg and the heads of European Commission and the World Health Organization, the letter was sent ahead of the Group of 20's virtual summit this weekend. It calls on the G20 to invest sustainably in the access to COVID-19 tools, accelerators, a funding gap of $4.5 billion to save lives and lay the groundwork for mass procurement and delivery of COVID-19 tools around the world. The letter also calls on the G20 leaders to commit jointly to a proportion of future stimulus spending on the tools, which is particularly aimed at securing supplies for lower-income countries. South Africa is a member of the G20, which represent both the developed and emerging countries. The Cooperative Bank of Kenya's net profits in the first 9 months of 2020 have dropped by 10% due to the adverse effects of COVID-19. The lender made a profit after tax of $88 million compared to $98 million at the same time last year, a blissful period for the banking sector before the pandemic depressed the economy. However, a 90% increase in loan loss provisioning in the third quarter of this year has eaten into the bank's bottom line, despite a slight expansion in its loan book. Namibia's Prime Minister, Sarah Akugongelewa Amadila, says that the country is accelerating financial sector reforms to ensure that it has an optimal framework. The ongoing reforms, which include amendments and the modernization of the financial sector legislative framework, are meant to enable the financial sector to play its part in supporting increased economic activity. Kugongolewa Amadila says that the financial institutions are key facilitators for economic growth and development through their intermediation role. The US dollar is trading at 379.65 Nigerian Naira, 10.99 Botswana Pula, 108.39 Kenyan Shilling, and 20.93 Zambian Kwacha. In BRICS currencies, one US dollar trades in Brazil 5.34, Russia 76.18, India 74.07, China 6.57. In South Africa, a dollar is trading at 15.47. The US dollar is also trading at 75 pence to the British pound and 84 cents to euro. Looking at commodities, gold is trading at $1,863 and platinum at $950 per ounce, while Brent crude oil is at $44.29 a barrel. Africa, your favorite channel.
A sports update up next with Figile Lingwati.
First up in our sports update, we are serving off with tennis news. Rafael Nadal kept alive his hopes of a first ATP Finals title, beating defending champion Stefanos Tsitsipas 6-4, 4-6, and 6-3 in London to qualify for the last four. The Spaniard, whose haul of 86 singles titles includes just one on indoor hard courts, is chasing the biggest prize missing from his resume at the 8th Man Elite event. The 34-year-old has qualified for the ATP Finals for a record 16 consecutive years, but has been forced to withdraw on six occasions. The second seed won his opening round-robin match against Andrei Rublev, but the defeat was against Dominic Thiem, meant he faced a shootout against 2019 champion Tsitsipas to reach the semifinals. Argentina rugby side, the Pumas skipper Michael Hooper pinpointed playmaker Nicolas Sanchez, along with former Wallabies coach Michael Chaker, as threats as Australia looked to avoid the embarrassing fate of New Zealand when they face Argentina. Australia head into Saturday's Tri Nations sellout clash against the Pumas in Newcastle, north of Sydney, buoyed by upsetting the All Blacks a fortnight ago. But Argentina's even more stunning 25-15 victory over Ian Foster's men last week quickly blew away any Australian complacency. Australia head into the game with one win from two in the Tri Nations, needing victory to maintain their title. New Zealand have lost two and won one, while the Pumas have games in hand, winning their only match so far. On to cricket news. Mark Boucher, head coach of South Africa's national men's cricket team, has revealed that he had been a victim of the coronavirus without knowing he had contracted the deadly disease. Boucher was speaking ahead of a limited overs series against England, which starts with the first 2020 international in Cape Town on the 27th of November. An unnamed South African player tested positive for COVID-19 when the South Africans assembled on Wednesday. He and other two with whom the infected player had close contact have been separated from the rest of the squad and will stay in isolation while being monitored by the team's medical staff.
To be honest with you, I mean, I was one of the lucky ones. I didn't even know that I had it. I mean, I'd been training for quite a few big runs that we do. During our off season, and I was still running, and when I did find out that I had it, I maybe felt a little bit down for one or two days. I was actually throwing to a couple of guys in the nets, and my body was aching and paining a bit, and I just thought it's because I haven't thrown balls for so long. But obviously realizing that that is the reason why I felt those aches and pains, and yeah, I thankfully I didn't get a bad dose of it. And before I knew it, it lasted for 2-3 days and it was done.
The series will take place in a biosecure bubble. Boucher says the bio bubble in which players had been placed was similar to security bubbles which the Proteas squad had previously experienced while playing in other countries.
Yeah, look, I think the bio bubble, living in a bio bubble, is something that's not new. I mean, we've been on tours where there's been security issues and that, and we've had to stay sort of in a hotel environment. So the actual living part is not too bad. It's something that we can get used to. We're staying at a fantastic hotel here where there's nice open space. And I think that is something that our management team have done really well on as well, is recognizing the problems that we've picked up around the world, having spoken to other teams that have been in bubbles. And we sort of try to look at that and say, how can we get better in those situations? So we've done that, and the guys are pretty happy with where we're staying at the moment.
That's your sport news this hour.
Africa, rise and shine. Africa, zorna. Africa, amka na unai.
That wraps up Africa Rise and Shine today and for the week. For myself, Lulu Gabu, producer Leander Maume, technical producer Mario Edwards, and the rest of the team, thank you for joining us. For comments about our show, send us an email at info@channelafrica.co.za, WhatsApp on +277 6300 3327, or tweet us at Channel Africa One. Taking us to the top of the hour for the news is John Cena by Shoma Jozi. Have a great weekend. Take care and be safe.
Hypo! Hypo! After-